time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Good morning, John. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, April the 10th, 2026.
It is, and lots going on in the world. Of course, we're in the midst of the ceasefire, I guess, in Iran right now. Interesting to me, one of the missiles continue to fly, the drones right. continue to fly. Israel doesn't seem to be complying with the ceasefire. The Strait of Hormuz is supposed to be open. Remember, it was open prior to the start of this war, and the president's approval ratings continue to fall through the floor. Major miscalculation, smart long-term, you know, international policy. What's your take?
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear that this was a mistake getting involved here militarily against Iran. And every military analyst for the last 30 years has said that if we engage that country in a conflict, they're going to close the Strait of Hormuz and they're going to bomb our allies in the Middle East. Both of those things have occurred. Iran, you know, best case scenario, I think, at this point is the U.S. extricates itself and works out some kind of an agreement over the straits. But Iran has made it very clear that they can shut that thing down anytime they want to. And that had never happened before. So, you know, have we taken a toll on their missile capacity? Absolutely. Have we weakened them militarily? Without question. One of the problems is we were given any one of a number of objectives for going in there. One of them, regime change. One of them, their nuclear program. One of them, their missile capacity. And, the nuclear program is still extant. May have been set back by this. We don't know. But, you know, the objective of regime change has not been achieved, if that ever was the objective. So it's hard to look at this for me as anything other than a miscalculation.
And many people say, oh, well, we would expect to hear the criticisms from, you know, Chuck Schumer and Leader Jeffries. But the president now faces opposition from Alex Jones, cuckoo, Megyn Kelly, and Tucker Carlson, all who are out there saying, what are we doing? Joe Rogan is a part of that group. The MAGA base seems to be eroding. Donald Trump, of course, does what Donald Trump does. He goes to his Truth Social and attacks these people as all low IQ individuals who don't matter, etc. Is this not transparent yet to Republican and MAGA supporters of the president that this is not about policy? This is about Donald Trump. These were some of the staunchest allies of support for him. The second they have criticism, he's got to tell us all they never knew anything and they're all low IQ.
Well, when you think about the impact that the new media has in politics, it's pretty, you know, it's real. And I think you could make a case that Donald Trump doesn't win in 2024 without the support of these online, the Joe Rogans and Megyn Kellys and Tucker Carlsons of the world. There's a split within the MAGA base. You've got a group, I think the majority, are loyal to Donald Trump. They believe in him. They trust him. So if he makes a decision to do something, they support it. But there's others that were more policy oriented than they were personality oriented. And for those folks who are looking at inflation, the job market getting weakened, the continuing downgrading of the GDP for the fourth quarter, now down to practically nothing, and now a war that they thought they were voting against by voting for Donald Trump, those people are disillusioned. And so, you know, there's been something of a fracturing of the MAGA base. That's why the job approval number, I saw a UMass poll a day ago or so that had him at 33% approval. That's the lowest I've seen. The Real Clear average still has him at about 41%. So I do think this has taken something of a toll on the president's support among the base.
Yeah, and the storm seems to be coming as we slide towards the November midterm elections. There's a former American on the world stage. His name is Pope Leo. He continues to go at the president on a daily basis, and the president, for some reason, continues to go against him. Pope Leo really using the bully pulpit, if you will, of the Holy See to point out the unjust nature of this war, calling on the president to end it. Is the fact that maybe the largest, most well-known faith leader in the world is continuing to speak out against the president almost on a daily basis taking its toll for folks who find themselves aligned with the Christian faith?
Well, I mean, the most fascinating aspect of all of this, of course, is that Pope Leo is an American.
Was.
First time in history. So he's uniquely attuned to what's happening in this country, and popes have spoken out on political matters forever. I mean, go back to John Paul II and the collapse of the Soviet Empire and the support of Lech Walesa in Poland. And he was Polish, was John Paul II. And it's so, you know, this is not unusual.
Many people on my, many pundits say that one of the reasons we started the Iran war was to distract attention from the Epstein files. I don't know if you saw yesterday, the First Lady.
I did.
Went unannounced to a press conference talking about the Epstein files, saying she never met the man. Well, she didn't say she didn't meet him. She didn't know him, even though there's lots of pictures of her and Jeffrey Epstein together. Went on further to say that women that are victims of Jeffrey Epstein should have their day in Congress. They should be heard from. The president seemingly blindsided by the fact that the First Lady went and spoke.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah, what's your take?
Who knows? Lots of theories out there. The funniest of them is that they used the war to distract from the Epstein files. Now they're using the Epstein files to distract from the war. I don't know if that's true. But, you know, as to the victims, and these are girls that were brutalized, raped, sold. As to those victims, there's no need for them to go to Congress because their victim statements are in the Department of Justice today. They're just not being released. And there's story after story after story in those files in the Justice Department. It is an outrage that the largest sex trafficking scheme in the history of the world is being covered up. And we don't know why it's being covered up, but it is clear and obvious that it is being covered up.
Midterm elections, if we went to a time machine just 4 months ago, people anticipated that the House likely could go for the Democrats because that's what happens in a midterm election for a president's party that's in power. Now there seems to be a realistic assessment that the Democrats may take control of the Senate. Do you maybe agree with that thought process?
Well, there's a possibility. It's going to depend on who Republicans nominate in a lot of these places.
John Easter, of course, came, and we had the March Madness, but spring has sprung. This is the best time.
This weekend is Orthodox Easter.
Yes, it is. And this is the best time of the year, right? We've got Cardinal baseball that's happening. The Masters is happening. Hockey's coming to its conclusion. We got the start of the playoffs that are taking place. We're going to visit with our own Dan Reardon, who's down in Augusta National a little later this morning, to hear the latest on what's going on with the Masters. Rory McIlroy, last year's champion, top of the leaderboard after day one. Closer to home, the Cardinals return home with a 7-5 record, only one game out of first place. Obviously, it's early.
It's early.
But we take on those Boston Red Sox.
Who are struggling.
Who've been struggling. I don't know. Just feels different this year than last year. It felt like we had a bad couple of first series at the beginning of last year's Cardinals season. This one's given me a little hope because we haven't lost a series yet.
Yeah, we lost the one to the Tigers.
Did
two
we?
To one, yeah.
Oh, all right, I'm wrong.
But, you know, it's interesting. Last year, you may forget, the month of May, the Cardinals played out of their minds. It was a good ball club. They were challenging for first place in the division, and people started really getting optimistic. And then, you know, it's a long season out there. And by the time we got to July, it was obvious that team was going nowhere, largely because of the starting pitching. We weren't hitting either. Last season. So, you know, it's early. I am encouraged. Jordan Walker, what he's doing is, I don't think any of us saw that coming after the past couple of seasons. This guy has been on fire in all of his internal numbers, his bat speed, his launch angle, his decisions on what pitches to swing at and take. All of that is a 180-degree turn from what we all witnessed for the last 2 years. And, man, if he can sustain this, he will become that special player the Cardinals thought they drafted so many years ago.
Yeah, and maybe it's just the psychology of going into this season, knowing that we were going to rebuild, expecting that this was not going to be a great season, to see us performing and competing on a nightly basis. I don't know. It seems to have put an energy into watching this team. To be honest with you, was dreading maybe watching some of these games at night, and it's must-see TV.
Buddy, I told you they're going to be better than people thought. Now, this is a big start tonight for Dustin May. He's 0-2 with, he's given up 13 runs in 7-plus innings so far in his two starts. And his velocity's fine. It's location. And I think he'll figure it out. He's a good pitcher, and he's got his body back in shape, but he's having a hard time locating his pitches.
Something interesting happened last night in Springfield, Missouri with the Springfield Cardinals. What was that?
Man, I've never seen it, and this may never have happened before. They stole home on back-to-back pitches in a game last night. And that's a professional baseball team, AA, and it was remarkable. Two steals of home back-to-back. All right, when we come back... what do we got? We got all kinds of stuff coming your way. We're going to visit with Scott Holt, the lead singer of Foghat. They're coming to town. And Dan Reardon joins us from the Masters.
John, the never-ending saga of policing in the city of St. Louis goes on. Of course, Governor Kehoe Rand said he was going to take back control of the police department here in the city of St. Louis. That's exactly what happened. Mayor Spencer announcing yesterday that she's going to sue, saying that, hey, the voters voted to have local control and the state took it away. I don't know what basis she has for that lawsuit. Obviously, there's some extreme tension that exists as it relates to budgeting and funding in a city that's got some real budget issues.
Yeah, but this, in my opinion, is a frivolous lawsuit, a stunt, and I'm a little surprised by it, honestly. You know, I thought Kara Spencer was working, playing nicely in the sandbox with the police commission. I get that they've had this hiccup over the budget numbers and the calls for raises. But look, the police in this city deserve raises, and we need the police to want to be in the city. And one of the problems that we have, of course, is that a lot of these 55 municipal police departments in St. Louis County, many of them pay better than what we pay in the city of St. Louis, and that's where the crime is.
Yeah,
but one of the places where the crime is.
John, supporters of the mayor would say, hey, look, we're all for it. We would like to see more police on the streets. That hasn't happened yet. We'd like to see better pay. They're working on that, and they found better pay. But many people think this is a huge budget, a take by the police department, which is at a time this city just can't afford it. We're seeing water pipes break, trash trucks not being able to pick up trash. There are some realistic issues that exist inside the city of St. Louis, and now you seem hand-tied to a board appointed by the governor who, you know, quite frankly, is sitting in Jefferson City and not here in St. Louis dealing with the day-in and day-out problems this mayor has.
Now, he's over here quite a bit, and of course he's from here, and he's appointed this police board. They're good people. And, you know, I really think that this is a misguided approach by the mayor. And look, I've applauded this mayor quite a bit since she assumed office, but this time I'm out.
It will be interesting to see if the mayor enjoys the support of most of the members of the Board of Aldermen in her struggle and lawsuit against the governor. Hey, John, we've got to step aside. Total Information with Hancock and Kelly rolls on.
One of history's rocketest bands is coming back to town, folks. I'm talking about Foghat. They're going to be at the Family Arena on May 2nd. They are a hot band. In fact, Michael, one of the first concerts I ever went to, I want to say it was probably 1981 or so, at the Kiel Opera House, was this very band, Foghat. A big hit,
wow.
Slow Ride, Fool for the City, just hit after hit, and they're still making great music. And joining us is their lead singer and guitarist, Scott Holt. Scott, welcome back to KOX.
Hey, John, thank you for having me back, man.
Yeah, we recorded this interview on Monday, a little inside baseball here, and it was a great interview. And come to find out that somehow the Major League Baseball Network was running simultaneously, so we couldn't use it. So you're very gracious to join us again. May the 2nd at the Family Arena. You guys are still creating new music, Scott.
We are still going. 54 years the band's been together. I've only been a part of it for the last 4 years, but it's been a glorious 4 years, and it's just a tremendous catalog of American music, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
Well, it's being recognized now with your latest album, wound up being nominated and winning a Grammy.
I was real proud of that. All the guys were. We had a ball making it. It was one of the easiest records I've ever made in my life. We just went in the studio and just did what we do, and it came out. So I was proud that everybody received it like they did and that it worked out good.
Talking about the album Sonic Mojo from 2023, you'll be playing some of those hits as well when you're in town on May the 2nd. And, you know, folks think about Foghat as being a hard-driving rock and roll band. It is. But the heart, the roots of this band has always been the blues.
Absolutely. I mean, Roger comes from Savoy Brown, which was a blues band in Great Britain and led by Kim Simmons. And, of course, I came from Buddy Guy's school. I played with Buddy Guy for 10 years. So we come from the blues, honestly, you know, and that's a tremendous influence. I tell people every night we do a Willie Dixon song, and Willie Dixon was a primary writer and producer and A&R man for Chess Records in Chicago for the blues. And if it wasn't for Willie Dixon, there wouldn't be any rock and roll, and that's the truth. So we definitely come from the blues.
You mentioned Roger Earl. He's the drummer. He's an original member of the band. He's the last original member still with the band, correct?
Well, we don't say that out loud because it sounds kind of, you know... I don't think you'd appreciate if we just pointed that out. Man, you're the last one hanging around. What's going on?
Well, you know, it's rare for the drummer to be the one that perseveres. Such a physical. But Roger, go ahead.
When you've led the life that Roger's lived, it's a miracle that he's the last one alive. He's got a tremendous constitution, and he's the engine and the heart of the band. I mean, this band wouldn't exist without Roger.
Well, it's always the drummer, buddy. Yeah. It's always the drummer.
Yeah, that's true.
So this band started off as a British band, and now you guys all live in the States, but the music. And I would assume that your concerts today are a pretty fair mix of all of those classic hits from the 70s and 80s and 90s, mixed in with a lot of your new stuff, right?
That's true. Rodney, the bass player, and I were talking last night. We all went to dinner, and that's the thing about this band is we all like live together. I mean, when we're on the road, we go to dinner together, we hang out together. But Rodney and I were talking about it last night, and it's very hard with a band that's got a catalog that's 54 years going, you know, of records to hit all those notes. But we try really hard to make sure we do the old stuff, we do the new stuff, we do the in-between stuff, the stuff that people haven't heard in a while, maybe something Foghat hasn't played live ever, you know, and we try to tackle all those things.
Well, 54 years, people come and go, and many, many bands throughout the history of rock and roll have had internal strife and disagreements and nasty breakups among the members. What is it that's kept Foghat humming and together like you all are?
Well, I can't speak for any iteration before mine, but I know that this current configuration of the band, we all genuinely love each other. We respect each other. We get along. We enjoy making music together. We all appreciate the position that we're in. We realize that having an opportunity to make a living playing your guitar or singing or jumping around on the stage and acting like an idiot, that's a precious thing, and everybody doesn't get it. So we're all grateful for the opportunity and the experience.
Yeah, I'm talking to Scott Holt. He's the lead singer of Foghat. They're coming to town in St. Charles at the Family Arena on Saturday, May the 2nd. Tickets available. If you've never seen this band live, folks, it's just tremendous. I mean, the music drives and pounds, and it's hit after hit after hit. And I couldn't encourage you more to check them out. Roger, you guys tour a lot. I mean, a lot.
We do. Yeah, we do. We stay on the road quite a bit. And that's, you know, that's what you do as a musician. I mean, if I tell my wife all the time, if I don't smell some diesel and see a Waffle House in my future, something's going on wrong. I've been home too long.
How do you keep it fresh when you're playing, you know, so many nights and so many months on end?
You know, it, for, for me personally, it's just I don't ever try to play the same thing twice. And you know, I don't really even sing it the same way twice. I try to, you know, stay close to the script, but at the same time, I couldn't do the same thing twice if I had to. So, and they found that out early on and painfully because I would do the wrong thing. But no, that's not how you do it. I know. But yeah, it's just, it's life, man. You're going to get up tomorrow and you're going to go through a routine that you did this morning, but it won't be exactly the same. And you know, that's kind of how we approach music.
Yeah. I would think having those blues roots is probably a fair amount of improvisation by all of the members, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's a little bit of wing in it to it, you know. And if we run into trouble, we call it jazz. But you know, we just, you know, we're musicians, and this is what we do. So we just kind of see where the muse is going to take us.
Well, that is Scott Holt. He's the lead singer, guitarist for Foghat, and Foghat is coming to St. Charles County at the Family Arena on Saturday, May 2nd. Hey, Roger, thanks so much for your time. Very gracious of you.
John and Michael, thank y'all so much.
All right, Total Information continues. The Masters. Dan Reardon joins us next on Camo X.
That's right. It is Masters weekend across the country, and it's a tradition unlike any other. And Camo X's own Dan Reardon is in Augusta National right now. Dan, let's get the jealousy part out of the way here. What year of the Masters is this for you?
39.
Good Lord. How beautiful is that? And what a Masters you have already. The reigning champion, Rory McIlroy, already at the top of the leaderboard after day one. How's this course look? And are you surprised that Rory didn't have a Masters hangover and put up some good score yesterday?
I'm not surprised that on the first day he didn't score well. He didn't play exceptionally well, but he got everything that was available to him out of the round. And in talking about the first day, I've never seen a leaderboard at the end of the first day like we see this year, because it's an all-star game. There's seven players out of the top nine have all won majors. Those seven players have won 15 majors combined. So you had a golf course that was somewhat gettable, and people were able to. It's perfect here. I mean, it cools down into the low 50s overnight. Warms up to the high 70s by the middle of the day. There is absolutely no wind until Sunday. So we're not surprised by Rory, but we're also not surprised by the other people who are playing well. If there are surprises, it's the people who didn't play well. For Jon Rahm to go out and shoot 78 is a shock to, I think, everybody. People expected a lot of Bryson DeChambeau. For him to shoot 76 is a surprise. But the guys at the top, they're the quality of the game, and they performed yesterday. And it's interesting to see what it will be the rest of the way.
Most of the LIV golfers had a bad day yesterday, but there is one person on the prowl, and it's not Tiger. It's the number one player in golf, Scotty Scheffler, who hung around at -2 yesterday. This is a guy who can put up a low score and run away with this tournament, isn't he?
He's certainly the player you're going to look at that's not currently leading this championship. And Augusta is different in that they come here every year. The committee, the people who set up this golf course, know exactly what they want. And I tend to look at the first round as they set the speed limit. I think the speed limit was 69, and Rory and Sam Burns broke it by a couple of strokes. And they know what they want to do the rest of the way. And I would expect either today or tomorrow that speed limit will bump up to about 70, and the good round will be a 68. And then when we get to Sunday and we get to the back nine, it's the Autobahn, and everybody can race as fast as they want to go. And I look particularly at the comments from Xander Schauffele after his round yesterday, because and Schauffele finished at 2 under, I believe. And he said he wasn't going to be more aggressive today. He says, I think I need to be more cautious today. So the players are aware of the fact that this is a unique setup at Augusta because of the weather, and it's a very dangerous golf course. And like I said, Sunday they're expecting 10-mile-an-hour wind with gust, and that will make it really dangerous.
15 took its toll on a couple of folks yesterday, Dan.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you have eagles and you have nines. You know, I mean, I don't. When you have a range of six strokes between the lowest and the highest score on the same hole, you know that. And that again goes to the firmness of the golf course. It doesn't have anything to do with wind or any of those kinds of things. The players have to be careful not only to make sure they reach the putting surface, but you can actually go over the green on 15. I remember my first Masters was 86 when Nicklaus won. And when Nicklaus came in after his win, he went through every hole that he played that day. And he talked about 15, and he said, in the past, long time ago, there used to be bleachers behind 15 green. And we as players knew that we could just hammer the ball into the bleachers and get a free drop and play the hole aggressively. And I thought, wow, he admitted they shot at the gallery. There are no bleachers there anymore. And you can go over 15 and you can reach the pond on 16. So it's a dangerous hole because it can hit you on both sides. If we remember, I think Rory McIlroy was over the green in two on Friday of last year and put it in the water twice because he chipped from above the green. It's a dangerous hole.
Weather seems to be cooperating with Augusta National. They've got a very firm course. You've talked about how they'll be able to throttle the scoring. There's a potential for some weather on Sunday?
Just wind. No, the temperature and everything else is intended to be the same. No, this will be a tournament played without moisture from Mother Nature.
There is one presence that's missing from the Masters. Doesn't seem to be taking too much of the attention away. Tiger's not there. Any thoughts or comments that came from some of the players about the fact that Tiger's not there?
Tiger, they acknowledged, was missed at the Champions Dinner. You know, there is sort of an assumption that he was going to play this year. And Tiger sort of let it out after the TGL appearance that it was questionable whether he was ready to go out and play golf. But there is a backlash to Tiger because he was supposed to be in town this week to dedicate the Jim Dent par 3 course they designed near a public course they just reopened called The Patch. And Tiger was supposed to be a part of that, and the club is sponsoring that. The club is very, very closely involved in that. And I am led to believe that the membership and Fred Ridley are very upset with Tiger and what he created, because he couldn't come here and they couldn't have that ribbon cutting celebration that they wanted, and he rained on their parade.
Just have a few seconds left. How good is Gary Player at 90? That was something.
You know, I was around Gary last year and talked to him when he was in St. Louis out at Norwood. He is an amazing person. And yes, he hit a very believable tee shot on one, but then he gives you the high kick. And Gary does a tremendous amount of setups every day. He is truly a treasure and a guy that's been preserved very well.
He is Dan Reardon. He's at Augusta National, the Masters.